Today, I am pleased to welcome to the studio the President and Chief Executive Officer of CRGT, Tom Ferrando. It's great to see you. Thanks for coming in today, Tom.
Thank you, Francis.
We always start, of course, with the elevator pitch. Tell me what CRGT does for its government clients.
Sure, I'll keep it simple. We're a mid-sized IT services company. We provide emerging technology solutions to the federal government. We've really focused on four customer sets for the past number of years. You know, DOD, the defense group, which is supporting the warfighter, civilian services, homeland security, and law enforcement. And, you know, like other services companies, we have a foundational approach to what we provide. We have infrastructure solutions and operations, which we've done for our customers, custom application software development, program management, business analysis, and system integration. And recently, we've really launched some new offerings around mobility, enterprise services, and geospatial solutions.
What kinds of questions are the agencies asking you about mobility? What do they want to know?
Well, it's fascinating about mobility because, you know, everybody has a smartphone in their pocket. Everybody has a device that they're used to. And I've told this story all the time that, you know, why is it that my 15-year-old daughter could take out an iPhone and get the latest application and use it today, and the federal government can't react that quickly. Mm-hmm. So really it's all about security. I think the fear in government is the device secure? Is my data secure?
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the number one question we're getting from our customers.
Is there one element of that, though, that you think is more important? Is the security of the piece more important, or is the security of the data more important?
I think it's really the security of the data, because the security of the piece is an easy fix. You know, we've done some solutions for customers where you install a kill pill, and if for some reason that device is lost or stolen, you know, it'll wipe out everything on it. Mm-hmm. So I don't think they're as concerned about the device, but it's really securing your data at rest and mm-hmm. securing your data in transit, mm-hmm. which is the problem.
That's kind of a relatively new development, though, isn't it? For a long time, I think the agencies seemed more concerned about every piece, the hardware being
right.
secure, and didn't think as much about the ones and zeros. Is that fair
to
say?
Yeah, well, you know, technology's changed over the last couple of years, and I think it wasn't quite ready for to be really rolled out in the last couple of years. Mm. So I think now they're looking at the power that it can have, and I think the soldiers, for example, in the Defense Department are clamoring for it, and I think members of different agencies in government would like to use it. Except there's a lot of, you know, policy decisions that have to be made, and it's a tough road.
Another thing that is driving this is, and tell me if this has been your experience, is I'm hearing from the IT side in government, people saying 2 years ago, people were coming in all the time and saying, I want to put my iPhone on the network and be able to use it. And the answer, the next question, why do you want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to.
Right.
And now people are able to come to the IT shops with purposes in mind.
Right.
Not quite at an ROI point yet, but able to say, I want to do these five things that I do in my job every day when I'm in, no matter where I am. Is that a, do you think that's an accurate summation?
Yeah, but I really think we as a country and we as a government have become more mobile. You know, we're all on the road. We're always, you know, doing our job somewhere other than in a building. And we've had some customers in law enforcement, for example, who didn't a couple of years ago have access to critical data.
Mm-hmm.
If they wanted access to critical data, they had to go back to the headquarters, go into their desktop computer, sign in, and get data. But their job 24 hours a day is to be on the road chasing bad guys.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a secure mobile device allows them to do their job on the road, you know, in remote locations and get access to information when they need it. You know, Homeland Security is a great example of that. Customs and Border Patrol is a great example of that. So we're seeing more and more, even within, you know, auditors and bank auditors and things. People are on the road and they need to get information.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to have that power and extend that to the device, to the handheld device.
I've heard two schools of thought about information sharing in a mobile environment, and I'd be curious to hear your ideas about this. One school of thought is it should get easier from here on out, because essentially we're building mobile infrastructures, not from scratch, but they're very early in their infancy. And so it should be easy, theoretically, to build interoperability among agencies in, so that DHS can communicate information to FBI within justice and so on and so forth. The other school of thought is that this idea, the work will be done whether we like it or not, the same way that the work's been done in the past, which is big silos everywhere, and everybody's in their own little world, kind of, and you have to poke holes in those silos deliberately and purposefully in order for that information to flow horizontally.
Right.
Which of those schools of thought do you think is more likely?
Well, you know, I think I've watched this in the last 20 years. I haven't seen technology solve that problem yet of agencies working together. I don't know why. I don't know if it's a cultural problem or what. But we've had the ability to collaborate prior to mobile devices, and we haven't really seen that really take root in the government. Will the mobile device allow that any easier? I'm not quite sure. But I think with the, you know, advances of new technology, it does make things a lot easier for that collaboration. I think we'll see more of that.
Are there any misunderstandings, do you think, at agencies about what mobile devices can do or should do, or what the potential is in the future?
Absolutely. I mean, I went to a symposium listening to some speakers, even in the Department of Defense, and you get different schools of thought. I mean, some people think putting a handheld device in 500,000 soldiers allows you to have 500,000 sensors in the world, really, and they could gather critical information, and then we could make sense of that information and react to that. So there's one speaker from the Defense Department would say, that's the direction we need to go in. 20 minutes later, a speaker will get up and say, it's too dangerous. You know, the bad guy's going to know exactly where we are and what we're doing. We have to stay away from it.
Yeah.
Social networking, the same thing. Some people think it's a powerful tool. Others think it's a dangerous tool and they should stay away from it. So it's different schools of thought we get there. So trying to make sense of that.
Are there right or wrong answers, though, do you think, to those questions? Or are there just different approaches, like along the lines of what you just described?
Well, I think we have to prove that they could be secure. I think once we've proven that, I think people will be more comfortable with it, and that's true with any new technology. I mean, when we all left the mainframes years ago and moved to a client-server environment, people didn't think that was going to be – that was too dangerous. Somebody could pick up my server and run out the door with it. Well, all we're doing is extending the same information to another device. It just happens to be smaller, and you can put it into your pocket. Once we prove that it could be secure and we show it, and we're doing pilots for customers now, they get more comfortable with it, and then they get excited about it. Then they see the dollars they can save – and the work that they get done more efficiently, you know, by having that in their hand.
My guest is the President, Chief Executive Officer of CRGT, Tom Ferrando, and we'll continue our conversation in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose.
It's more than just a legislative mandate. It's a shared goal for federal agencies and industry leaders charged to create a nationwide health information network. Reaching that goal will require knowledge and a collaborative effort. Tune in to hear nationally recognized health leaders discuss barriers, initiatives, and share their perspectives on what you can do to advance healthcare using IT. Don't miss Visualizing the 21st Century of Healthcare Today, a panel sponsored by HIMSS, Tuesday, May 17th at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
HIMSS, the global leader in health IT education, invites healthcare policy leaders, IT decision makers, and providers to the Government Health IT Conference and Exhibition, June 14th and 15th. This is your chance to see how the latest innovations in federal and state interagency initiatives utilize IT to achieve improved care delivery and quality. Register at govhealthitconference.com and share successes, challenges, and best practices with decision makers from government, industry, and the healthcare community.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Facing a new day, delivering services efficiently, improving citizens' lives.
Booz Allen Hamilton supports the most important challenges of government, from defense and economic security to health and cyber solutions. Booz Allen's strategy and technology consultants partner with clients to deliver results that endure. Whether managing today's issues or looking beyond the horizon, clients can count on Booz Allen to help them be ready for what's next. BoozAllen.com/ready for what's next.
Nurse means noble. Nurse means selfless. Mothers nurse their children. You nurse someone back to health. If there were ever a group of people more on the give side of the give-take continuum, it would be news to us. I mean, why does one become a nurse? Because working 8 at night to 10 in the morning is so appealing? Because the glamour of day-to-day encounters with a wide variety of bodily fluids is too much to resist? Nurses are nurses because their capacity to care is colossal. Their sympathy, superhuman. Even when you try to act all steely and businesslike, you can't fool us. We still see the love in the tough. We can still hear that gargantuan heart all squishy with compassion thumping away. So while too often you yield the spotlight for just this moment, we're asking all the nurses out there to do what clearly doesn't come natural and take a bow. Kaiser Permanente. May our 45,000 nurses all live long and thrive.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
I'm Amy Morris. Here's a look at Friday morning's Federal Drive. Lawmakers are up in arms over a draft executive order that requires contractors to disclose political contributions. We'll have the latest from a Capitol Hill hearing. And listen for BRAC Impact, a Federal News Radio and WTOP in-depth series. We'll hear from Army Materiel Command. They actually left Northern Virginia for Alabama. How'd they pull that off? That and more Friday morning, starting at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with President and CEO of CRGT, Tom Ferrando. And we were talking about mobile computing and mobile technology in the first segment, Tom. And the whole idea of security for that, for all these devices that are going on the networks, is giving IT people just so much, so many headaches. A couple of weeks ago, I was at an event hosted by AFSEA Bethesda, where Vivek Kundra laid another layer on top of that. That layer being, maybe we should give every federal employee a stipend and let them go buy whatever they want, whatever kind of computing technology they want. And I could just see IT people in the room going, oh, just shoulders slumping the whole deal. Not because it was a bad idea necessarily, because it would remove one layer, the whole purchasing layer, from their tray of responsibilities. But securing who knows how many different devices of who knows how many different operating systems and how many different formats and so on, potentially could be pretty challenging. Talk about the implications of that kind of a move. Well, and what you've seen in the interim, which is moving from the world of everybody has a desktop and that's the only way people work, and then a few laptops get sprinkled in and so on as this chain has evolved.
Well, it's definitely a cultural change we've seen. And, you know, that's typical of IT departments. And I used to work in an IT department, and what their job always has been is to secure the device and really control everything. If you look at most IT shops, they want to know who you are, what machine you have. They want to go acquire that machine. They want to load it up with the standard, if you will, operating system that my agency is going to be using. I'm going to put the applications that I control and I'm allowing you to have on that machine. I'm going to build the appropriate firewalls, and I am going to control it. And I think when you look at the world of mobility, they really can't do that anymore. Mm-hmm. And really, IT shops have to understand that they can't do that anymore. There are too many devices on the market. There's too much power that is at your fingertips that you can't keep up with that, and you really just can't have that type of control. However, you do need control. So I think there are ways you can take a device and even within the device create a secure part of the device where you'll have critical information that's encrypted the way you want to have it, and other things that happen outside that little sandbox, if you will, maybe they're not under the control of IT, and that's okay. And they need to get used to, you know, being able to do that. But that's really the problem that we're all wrestling with, and that's the problem government's really wrestling with. Is where do you relinquish that control yet still have that that tight security that you definitely need.
I've heard Jerry Davis, the chief information security officer at VA, talk about that very idea, mm-hmm. that, and I think he actually used the term sandbox, that we have this area that we can work in, and then the rest of the device doesn't have anything to, we don't have to worry about the security implications there. I'll take his word for it and your word for it that the technology will work. I'm really interested, though, in that cultural thing that you're talking about, right. and how you go to an IT organization that's been used to doing things a particular way, or at least along a particular line for, what now, 30, 40 mm-hmm. years, at least style-wise, not the same people necessarily, and get them to really be able to let that mindset go and take on a whole new mindset that says, we're not going to be able to be in complete lockdown control of every single thing that goes on. Right. And we're going to be happy with the control that we have, limited as it may be.
Yeah, and I think what they can do is, they could limit the number of choices. Maybe it's not that we're going to allow people in government to get any type of device from anywhere you want. But you pick a handful of the most popular devices, the iPhones, the iPads, the Androids, those type devices. You find a way you're going to secure it with the sandbox. You find a way that you're going to provision the applications that you need. But it's really even an acquisition problem. I mean, if you think about it, going back to my example of my son or daughter being able to download an app mm-hmm. on their iPhone, think about how to do that in the government world. You can't just download an app. There's a whole acquisition process.
Yeah.
You've got to put a request for a quote and request for proposal out there for somebody to build the app. Then you need a bunch of people to go in and tell them how long it's going to take to build the app. And then people have to bid on that. And really, when you think what innovation is coming in the world, it's happening in garages every day and colleges and universities, which is made in the commercial world. For example, the iPhone marketplace, a really popular tool because mm-hmm. people could create an app, they could stick it on the marketplace, next day people are using it, and it becomes viral. How do you create that type of energy in the government and allow government employees to have that kind of power at their fingertips? So I think even it's not so much the IT security issue, which is one I think we could solve.
Mm-hmm.
The acquisition process needs to be looked at. How do you do that without a request for proposal
yeah.
and 10 different bids?
Uh-huh.
The guys in their garage aren't going to bid on that. And the big companies don't want to sit and build apps. That's not really a big moneymaker for them.
Right.
So, that's a problem I think that we have to start taking a look at.
One of the selling points of Android when it came along was that anybody could write an app for it, that mm-hmm. you didn't have to necessarily be a professional coder to be able to understand it. So the proliferation potentially, I read recently the Army's going with Android as their operating system of choice, and I'm picturing a scenario where somebody is in the field and figures, well, I can just write this myself and distribute it amongst my buddies, and that never goes through any kind of mm-hmm. approval process. It never goes through any kind of vetting or whatever. And as resourceful as troops are in the field in mm-hmm. other areas, it's hard for me to imagine that the same thing couldn't happen
right.
when it comes to mobile computing.
Yeah, and I think, that's always the extreme. I think, getting the government to move from the long acquisition process of RFPs and RFQs and multiple bids and vehicles to somebody on the fly building an app, I think is, the two extremes. I think you could probably come up with a way where you could have a government marketplace and have a set of rules by which people could put applications in there and probably some type of automation to vet those applications to make sure that they're not, creating harm, mm-hmm. Doing more harm than good. But there are so many things that we've seen. For example, we had a customer who historically, created training manuals. Every year, soldiers need to have a training manual, and it's thousands of pages long, and it takes weeks, if not months, to produce them, print them, and distribute them at a cost of a lot of money. And I watched how there was an app built to put that training manual on an app, on a phone,
mm-hmm.
and you saved on distribution costs, you saved on printing costs. I think they saved somewhere near $1 million on just, and people got it instantaneously,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to waiting for the distribution to be sent out. And really, it's public information anyway. You could go to the net and download it, so it doesn't really need to be secured.
Right.
So there's so much power in just getting information that isn't really classified or isn't secured out to the hands of the people who need them.
Well, let's talk about that element of it, too, when we come back. The security part of it is great, but not everything needs to be as secure as something else needs to be, and how you sort that out and make sure that you have the right stuff going to the right levels of security. We'll do that when we come back. Tom Ferrando is my guest. He is the President, Chief Executive Officer of CRGT on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This week's Kaiser Permanente Experts in Health topic is cervical cancer screening, featuring Dr. Farzaneh Sabi, an obstetrician-gynecologist with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group.
Cervical cancer is a preventable and curable disease when detected early. Since there usually are no signs of infection or early cervical cancer, screening is critical to timely detection. Starting at age 21, women should start receiving Pap tests. Pap tests are very effective at finding abnormal cells before they turn into cervical cancer. Women aged 30 to 65 should have a Pap test and a high-risk HPV test at least every 3 years. When an HPV infection doesn't go away on its own, it can lead to cervical cancer. Research suggests that these screening tests, along with appropriate treatment, can reduce cervical cancer cases and deaths by as much as 90%. Kaiser Permanente encourages you to see your doctor and get screened for cervical cancer. It can save your life. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
From text messages to apps, games and email, the mobile internet is becoming a bigger part of our lives every day. And whether we live in the city or on the open countryside, all Americans should benefit from mobile internet investment. That's why LightSquared is investing in the first nationwide wholesale-only 4G LTE mobile broadband network integrated with coast-to-coast satellite coverage. By partnering with wireless service providers, retailers, and device manufacturers, LightSquared is making seamless, ultra-fast mobile broadband a reality for every American. Send an email from the Grand Canyon. Download movies in minutes while on the go. Make calls hundreds of miles from the nearest cell tower. It's all possible with the LightSquared network. LightSquared, lighting the way to a wireless broadband revolution. Learn how LightSquared is creating jobs, encouraging innovation, and investing in vital American infrastructure at LightSquared.com.
Please join Jim Fleisig May 24th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss secure cloud computing initiatives in the federal government. The panel includes government leaders from the GSA, DISA, and the Department of Energy. Don't miss the Federal Executive Forum Tuesday, May 24th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com. Sponsored by Lockheed Martin, SafeNet, and Red Hat.
Profile America, Thursday, May 12th. This week marks the anniversary of the first regularly scheduled television broadcasts, and the date may surprise you. They were made in 1928 and originated from radio station WGY in Schenectady, New York. The broadcasts only lasted a half hour, 3 afternoons a week. The viewers were mostly the technical staff at nearby General Electric, which had designed the system and used the broadcasts to refine their equipment. A handful of hobbyists who had built their own sets also watched the programs on 3-inch screens. Now, Americans watch an average of almost 5 hours each day. To reach their huge audience, advertisers spend more than $50.5 billion on television advertising annually. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
It wasn't so long ago that collaboration was a bad word in government. Today, we know that the only way to solve our biggest challenges is for industry and government to work together to collaborate. At its upcoming Management of Change conference at the Homestead in Hot Springs, Virginia, ACT-IAC provides an ethical and trusted forum to explore solutions to our most pressing IT challenges. Be a collaborator. Register for Management of Change today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on Industry Chatter today is Tom Ferrando. He is the President, Chief Executive Officer of CRGT. And we were talking before the break about the trying to sort out all the various kinds of information and kinds of data that people are using, not just on mobile devices, but all over the place. Do you think the systems that are in place that agencies are using to do that are pretty effective at sorting out information so that the right people can see it the right ways?
Yeah, I think the government agencies have been very conservative in controlling their data, and they have to be. You know, it's almost like I have to say we do cybersecurity. I think it's a law now that everybody who does work here has to say they do cybersecurity. But as you know, and you've talked about it before, that's one of the big buzzwords in town. And really, what is cybersecurity? I mean, I've been in information technology for 25 years. We've been securing our data at the mainframe level, at the client server level, everywhere for many years. So, but it's taken on a life of its own at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as a company, we did an acquisition of another firm last year. We looked to do other acquisitions, and I must have looked at 30 companies, and every one of them said they do cybersecurity.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are just giving badges for people to come in the door, and others are doing information operations or offensive or defensive kind of things. But I think the agencies, you know, they have a very strict certification and accreditation process that you need to go through. It's very long, very cumbersome, as it probably should be,
mm-hmm.
to make sure that the applications that are running on their networks are secured, that the data that they're using are controlled, and you know, bad guys aren't getting in and trying to break into those networks. So, yeah, I think they've done a very good job. Obviously, we're waiting to see as Cyber Command steps up what that's going to mean. Is there going to be a certification process that all of the engineers like those at CRGT have to go through before they're allowed to touch a network or touch an application, and at what level is that going to be?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think they've done a very good job. I think I'd like to see it you know, move a little quicker, but, you know, we'll see.
You live with what you got, I
yeah.
guess. You said agencies are very conservative. Are they too conservative when it comes to what they do with their data?
It's a hard question. I mean, how can you be too conservative when you're dealing with you know, bad guys trying to break in and ruin your infrastructure?
Mm-hmm.
All you need is one bad event to happen, and they will say, you know, you should have been more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's good to err on the side of being more conservative, especially with, but there's layers of it, like we talked earlier. There's some information that's public information that is readily available, like we talked earlier about training manuals or mm-hmm. or other types of documents that, you know, maybe you could push that through the process a little bit easier. And I think they're working that out. You know, the 25-point plan talks about it, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about it. And industries, I think it's a good collaboration between industry and government. I think government's listening to what industry has to say. And, you know, we all have the same mission in mind. So, yeah, I can't say they could ever be too conservative when it deals with cybersecurity.
When you talk about the 25-point plan, that collaboration seems to be the one of those points that's generated the most kind of buzz around town. As far as what the agencies can ask from vendors, what the vendors can communicate back, and then the level of willingness sometimes to participate in that collaboration, because I'm sure you're the same as other companies. You want to help agencies understand the solutions that are out there, the mm-hmm. things that are possible, but you don't want to give away any information that might give your competitors an advantage. Where's that balance, do you think, and what vehicles either are in place or should be in place that those conversations can happen, that you can communicate mm-hmm. as much information as the agencies need for decision-making without giving up the store on your end?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of questions there, and there's a lot of issues. You know, if you're close with your customer and you're a technology firm like we are, you have those conversations every day. I mean, part of our job is to bring new technology to our customers and explain it to them. When you talk about the vehicles, though, I think some of the issues that I've personally found in dealing with the government as a mid-sized firm is it's sometimes difficult to really play in that market. There's special vehicles for small business, and then there's the full and open that all the big boys are going to go after. And a lot of times those mid-sized firms have a lot of innovation, a lot of ideas, and they're not really being asked to the table to play. So
mm-hmm.
I've always recommended that they put some vehicles on the market for mid-sized companies like ours so we could get there and share some of that innovation, you know, with government.
Mm-hmm.
I think the government puts out their request for information, you know, prior to a request for proposal. And I think, depending on the agency, some of them are really interested in what you have to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's where our thoughts are. Tell me how you'd solve this problem. And, you know, we all respond to those. Some we think take it seriously. Some we think, you know, don't. That's just the nature of doing business, you know, with the government.
Is there anything you can do about that, or is that just really up to the individual people at the agencies to just how they're going to be?
Yeah, I think we're seeing actually, because of what's happening with the economy, what's happening with the budgets, what's happening with consolidations, I think agencies are now looking for less expensive alternatives. So they're starting to come to the mid-sized firms to talk to us about how we can do that. I think one of the advantages we have as a mid-sized company is we could be nimble. We could turn fairly quickly. Some of the large companies have trouble doing that. So I think, but there isn't a vehicle yet. I mean, we've asked for it. We hear chatter that here's an IDIQ coming out and they're definitely looking for mid-sized companies on this one. You know, you should go pursue this one.
Mm-hmm.
We're pursuing as many of those as we can, but I would love to see a mid-sized business vehicle. That would be a great thing.
What, when you're communicating with the agencies and way before the actual request for proposal or whatever, talk about how those conversations go and talk about how the kinds of things they're asking, the kinds of things that they want to know about, maybe technology that they're not familiar with, that kind of thing.
Well, you know, sometimes if you're already with a customer, if you already have a program that you're supporting, it's certainly a lot easier to have those conversations because, you know, especially in the programs that we're supporting, you know, we support some 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're there with the customer. We live and breathe with the customer, and we're there to solve their problems. And really, as a services company, you know, you're there really just solving problems. You're selling solutions. We don't have a product or a commodity sale where I can come in and demo something and walk out the door.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why the business development cycle is a little bit difficult for some of the services companies. And that's something we focus on all the time. Is how could you, first of all, find out who the decision makers are at an agency and find out what their problems are.
Mm-hmm.
They've been a little bit, you know, more transparent. A lot of them put out their strategic direction and what problems they're trying to solve. I know Homeland Security recently published over the past year what problems it's having and what it wants to solve. And we, as a company, went after one of the IDIQs as a prime to go solve some of those problems. So they'll put those out there and you try to find who that decision maker is, try to get an audience with them, but that's where it becomes, you know, the tricky part, because it's what's your problem and how can I solve that problem?
Mm-hmm.
And you got to be able to think on the fly. You have to be able to bring the right people to the table. People have done that before. They've solved that problem before. A lot of times, you know, we bring Koch products to the solution, or we custom develop something, but you don't know until you're in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
These agency CIOs are getting inundated by product vendors who want to sell product.
Mm-hmm.
And they need sometimes an integrator to come in and say, okay, I need an independent voice to tell me, really, does this product do what they say it does
mm-hmm.
or not? It's the challenge. I mean, that's the challenge of doing business in this marketplace. I think we've done it fairly well. But that's something that we're always talking about back at the office.
Tom Ferrando's President, Chief Executive Officer of CRGT, my guest for the hour on Industry Chatter on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Conversation continues in a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. Big Oil defending big tax breaks. At a Senate hearing today, Democrats took aim at top oil company CEOs over the billions in tax subsidies they now receive. This exchange between Chevron CEO John Watson and West Virginia Senator Jay Rockefeller.
I don't think the American people want shared sacrifice. I think they want shared prosperity. And what we have to offer...
Lovely
Senator.
Statement. But do you understand how out of touch that is? We don't get to shared prosperity until we get to shared sacrifice.
The news, President Obama just wrapping up a Rose Garden ceremony honoring America's top cops, law enforcement officials from around the country showing bravery and valor in the line of duty.
To all of you and to all who wear the badge, thank you for keeping us safe.
But the president has also asked Congress to extend FBI Director Robert Mueller's 10-year term for another 2 years, saying the country needs stability during what he calls a critical time. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
If you're thinking about selling your car, the first place you should go is CarMax. At CarMax, we'll buy your car, even if you don't buy a car from us. And it couldn't be easier. Just bring in your car and we'll appraise it for free and give you a written offer that's good for 7 days. So you can think it over or sell it right away. If it's time to sell your car, do it the easy way. Just bring it into CarMax today. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Instant messaging. Instant coffee. Instant hair removal. The world has gone instant. So why does it take so long for your hotel points to add up before you get any rewards? At America's Best Value Inn, there is no waiting. Sign up for our free value club at any of our 900 hotels in North America or at americasbestvalueinn.com and enjoy an instant 15% discount, room upgrade, and late checkout when available. We've got you covered with more value, more comfort, and instant rewards.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
The Federal Drive is every weekday from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio 1500 a.m. Hear interviews, news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. The Federal Drive team will help give you the important information you need about the federal government and how it impacts your organization or agency. Tune in 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. or go to federalnewsradio.com. The Federal Drive is sponsored by CDWG. CDWG, the people who get it.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Christopher Smith, Chief Information Officer at the Department of Agriculture.
Cloud, it really is an opportunity, and it's changing rapidly still. And I think it's different parts of the mature that we've already leveraged, and those that are maturing at a lesser rate but moving even more rapidly are the ones we're watching and trying to figure out how do we leverage that. I mean, if you look at data center that was built 6-12 months ago versus one that's being built today, they're demonstrably different in that short amount of time.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
It's In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Tom Ferrando is the President and Chief Executive Officer of CRGT, and he's my guest on Industry Chatter today. You mentioned a little bit earlier in the program that your company's done some acquisitions recently. The M&A market, by all accounts, is very active. Some folks think it's as active as it's ever been, or maybe more so. What makes now a good time to be where you are, which is looking at acquisitions of other companies and other technologies?
Well, I can tell you, I don't know what other companies are doing, but I can tell you what we're looking for. We look for capabilities that marry well with ours. Folks who have some relationships that we may not have, people that have some vehicles that we may not have, and the culture really is an important one. I mean, like I said, we looked at a lot of different companies, and we found one that actually was doing some really neat work in the geospatial world and in custom software development. So you're trying to listen to your customers, find out what they want. You look, you go back to the office, you find out what you have to offer, and you're either going to no-bid something and walk away from it or turn them on to somebody else, or you're going to try to build that capability from scratch, or you're going to go acquire it. And clearly, acquiring it's a lot quicker.
So,
I don't know if the market's good or bad. I mean, I think it was interesting about a year ago when people didn't quite know what was going to happen with the capital gains tax. you had a lot of private owners who were saying, I'm going to sell now and take advantage of the lower rate and sell before something happens in government and I got to pay a lot more. So you saw a lot of activity. I think when you see a reduction in budgets and reduction in spending, you've got a lot of companies who are then, you know, their revenue is starting to shrink. And they have a public market or public interest that they have to support. And maybe the only way to show growth again is to do an acquisition and get moving forward. So, but again, we're a mid-sized company. You know, we're really looking for those type of capabilities that really help us bring something to our customers that we don't really have, but really isn't such a stretch that it would be ridiculous for us to manage.
There's a phenomenon that's happening in the market because of the budget situation that we're in that I'm wondering if it impacts your company at all. There are folks that are at your size or even smaller that are saying the big guys are coming down and doing deals or going after business that 5 years ago they might not have. And that's pushing against us because we're competing against these people now. And so that's pushing us down a little bit, or maybe it's pushing somebody multi-levels. You see where I'm headed. Is that something that you're seeing as well?
Yeah, you know, we see it. We're not really afraid of it. I've always said I'll take my all-star team and put them against the all-star team of anybody in the Beltway, and we'll beat them. Okay, but here's what happens, is, and I go back to government acquisition process. There'll be a problem that needs to be solved. We know how to solve it. They'll put an RFP on the street and say, okay, tell me where you've done this five times. Well, I may not have done it five times. They may have done it two or three times. And the big boys will come downstream and bid for that work. So I think we need to really focus on some of that acquisition process to allow, again, some mid-sized companies to go after that. But I think we're actually in a good position because of the budget crunch, because I think, you know, the government agencies want to do things less expensively. They want to do things faster. Even if you look at the, you know, the 25-point plan, they're talking about breaking things down into meaningful, manageable chunks and smaller chunks. And that's something that's, you know, we're good at. That's with smaller companies, they're very good at. And I think we have an advantage over the large companies. And plus, we could do it less expensively. So, yeah, I don't like when I always see them. I actually, you know, joke about it that years ago, you would never see one of these big boys announce a $3 million win. I mean, that wasn't big news years ago. Now they're announcing a $3 million win, which, you know, starts to scare you if that's important to them. So, but you know, it's a bit of a roller coaster ride.
I did notice a buzzword on your website, speaking of what you were just talking about, CRGT, solving complex challenges with agility and strength. You didn't waste any time getting that word in there.
Right. Do you like that line?
I like that line.
If you like it, I wrote it. But if not, we'll blame marketing for that. Yeah, I mean, you know what we did, though? We actually surveyed our customers. We brought a firm in and said, go talk to our customers, and what words do they use to describe you? And nimble and agile came out, and that's how we ended up with that tagline. So, you know, and I think that's just the entrepreneurial spirit of a smaller company. You know, our threshold is lower than most. We'll go after some things that large companies will say, well, I don't have a 90% chance of winning. I'm just going to pass on that one. You know, we'll go after those and take some more chances than big companies take. And you have to. I think that will help in the environment that we're in with the government today, and I hope they all see that.
What does that make you think, though, when a term that you like to apply to yourself becomes one of the points in the plan is to do, use agile development? Well, we're agile. I mean,
right. Yeah, we loved it when we saw that. I thought that was fantastic. And it's funny, if you really, you know, as an old programmer by trade, you know, if you look at how we used to build programs in the old days, it was a long life cycle. And it would be, you know, months and months of planning and months of analysis and design and months of coding and testing. And then years later, you'd come out with a product. And you've watched in the software development world that that whole paradigm change to this agile method where we're going to go and we're going to get into these scrum sessions and very quickly, within 30 days, release something. And then we're going to release something else. And that's the new world. Well, it's funny how software development kind of led that way. And now government agencies are saying, I want that method for everything I do, my acquisition, my integration, my infrastructure. I want to see wins quicker. I think sometimes, you know, IT gets a black eye and a bad rap for spending billions and billions of dollars. And even when you look at the introduction to Vivek's plan, it's, you know, we got to reduce the spending. But I think government needs to use technology to do things more effectively. Embrace the technology to do things less expensively. So don't blame technology and don't cut it off. you know, invest in it correctly, mm-hmm. in the right way.
Tom Ferrando is the President, Chief Executive Officer of CRGT, my guest on Industry Chatter. We'll wrap up our conversation in just a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
From text messages to apps, games and email, the mobile internet is becoming a bigger part of our lives every day. And whether we live in the city or on the open countryside, all Americans should benefit from mobile internet investment. That's why LightSquared is investing in the first nationwide wholesale-only 4G LTE mobile broadband network integrated with coast-to-coast satellite coverage. By partnering with wireless service providers, retailers, and device manufacturers, LightSquared is making seamless, ultra-fast mobile broadband a reality for every American. Send an email from the Grand Canyon. Download movies in minutes while on the go. Make calls hundreds of miles from the nearest cell tower. It's all possible with the LightSquared network. LightSquared, lighting the way to a wireless broadband revolution. Learn how LightSquared is creating jobs, encouraging innovation, and investing in vital American infrastructure at LightSquared.com.
It's the only program of its kind in the world. A unique opportunity to help strengthen our country's defense and further your career. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University's School of Management. The only executive MBA degree tailored to developing leaders and managers in the U.S. defense industry. A unique combination of high-caliber executive business education, defense industry-specific knowledge, and hands-on learning designed to accelerate your career in the military, government, and corporate defense sectors. All without the career interruption of a traditional degree. Learn more at som.gmu.edu/defense. That's som.gmu.edu/defense. Do it today because the last day to apply for the fall semester is July 15th. The National Defense Executive MBA at George Mason University, helping our country's defense, advancing your career.
We need to explore that cave, Sergeant.
Sir, the opening's too small. I can't get a man in there, sir.
I'll go. Who are you?
I'm Sug V, the robot for the infantry, sir.
A robot for infantry?
Yes, sir. I'm small, light, and versatile. A tool that can protect every squad, especially when dealing with the tough conditions in Afghanistan.
Well, what are you waiting for? Get in there, Sug V.
Yes, sir.
For more information, visit iRobot.com. Protecting troops. Saving lives. Making a difference. iRobot.
It wasn't so long ago that collaboration was a bad word in government. Today, we know that the only way to solve our biggest challenges is for industry and government to work together to collaborate. At its upcoming Management of Change conference at the Homestead in Hot Springs, Virginia, ACT IAC provides an ethical and trusted forum to explore solutions to our most pressing IT challenges. Be a collaborator. Register for Management of Change today at actgov.org. That's actgov.org.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is the President and Chief Executive Officer of CRGT, Tom Ferrando, and on Industry Chatter today. We've talked on a number of occasions throughout the program about the acquisition process, and you've expressed kind of a desire for more opportunities for companies like yours to get involved. Do you feel comfortable that the agencies, the acquisition workforces at the agencies, are getting better skilled at being able to do the apples-oranges comparison in the services area that they've struggled with for a fair amount of time?
I think they are. I think they could always get better. I think it's a depends answer. You know, some agencies are better than others.
Sure.
I think, you know, what was interesting I've seen over the last couple of years was the increased number of protests that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, many years ago, you would never protest a decision. You thought you'd get, you know, a black mark on your name and you wouldn't be invited back to play.
Mm-hmm.
Then it became almost a part of your bid and proposal costs as you're going to go bid. And if you lose, you'll protest and you'll see where it goes. And I think what that created was the agencies being very controlling. It took the process a lot longer. They were fearful of a protest. So I think they got sharper and better at it. I think, you know, there's more discussion with industry prior to these opportunities. There's more industry days and there's more open discussion. So, again, it depends. Some agencies are better than others.
Mm-hmm. As we get ready to wrap up here, we just have a couple of minutes left. If you and I sit down and have the same conversation 2 years from now, what do you think will have changed? What do you think will be the same, in it, especially as it relates to the kinds of technology and the kind of culture that we talked about toward the beginning of the show?
Well, I think one of the beautiful things of doing work in the government is it's always changing. And the beauty of doing work in the technology field that we're in with emerging technologies, it's always changing, so you'd better get used to it. I think there'll be an increased emphasis or continued emphasis on security and cybersecurity. I think, or I'd like to hope, that the government is going to be at a place where they can embrace technology faster.
Mm-hmm.
They could streamline that acquisition process to embrace technology because, I think we may have said it off air that, you know, technology is going to be the solution for government to do things better and to do it, you know, more efficiently. So I'd like to think that they'll be more nimble like we are. And I'd like to see them embrace some of these technologies that really you and I have access to and government agencies don't.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot more that I have here, and I just don't have the time to go over it with you, but I'm grateful for you being here to talk about all this stuff today, Tom. It's been a pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me, Francis.
Happy to do it. Tom Ferrando is the President Chief Executive Officer of CRGT.